7. Tonight, the Bucks are in Portland to play the Trailblazers. The Bulls are in Charlotte to play the Hornets. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service looks like this. Should be a nice day today, partly sunny and mild. We're looking for a high today of 43. And the current numbers, it is 37 degrees this morning in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It is now 10 past 8. The morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're talking about snow and ice today. A little later in the hour, we're going to be talking about the 20th anniversary of the Snowdance 10-Minute Comedy Festival of the Over Our Head Players. And we'll be talking with Rich Smith about that, who had the great idea of doing that. And it's turned out to be a blockbuster success over these last two decades. But first, the ice we're going to be talking about, specifically a proposed indoor ice arena in Racine County, Racine County's first indoor ice arena. And two of the gentlemen who have been working incredibly hard to bring this dream to fruition, to reality, are my morning show guests for the next few minutes, Mike Frontier and Mark Hertzberg, who both sit on the committee that is underway with fundraising efforts, and they've been at this for several years already, and tantalizingly close to the final goal, which will make all of this dream a reality. So we're going to be talking with them about what this process has been like, the reasoning behind such a proposal, what it could mean for the citizens of Racine County, and what needs to happen in the next few months to make all of this come true, shall we say. Mike Frontier and Mark Hertzberg, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Great to be here, Greg.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to have both of you here. And of course, you are both well known in the community for being active in all kinds of different efforts. And it's no surprise that you are taking the lead on this really exciting project. Mike, I think you serve as president of, yeah, of the committee. Mark, you're the secretary. Mike, why don't you give us kind of a historical sketch of where all this began and what's been happening over the last 3 or 4 years?
Sure. Well, 4 years ago, County Executive Delagrave invited us, so four of us, to visit Beloit. And we, Dave Easley, Steve Anderson, who is a figure skating wizard and has worked around the world with figure skating, and Mark and I went to Beloit with Jonathan and representative from the County Parks Department. And I must say, the team, the four of us, have worked very closely and over these 4 years, and the county's been a partner in this. We've probably met with the county 20 times at least in terms of what step to take next. And in visiting Beloit, we found out that that rink started out with tarpaulins on the side, and now it's all enclosed and is a fixture in the community, and the business community is behind it because of the energy it brings to town, especially throughout the winter months. After visiting Beloit, we visited several other sites to get a sense of what it takes. Cedarburg, which is skating from 6 in the morning to midnight. Can't get enough ice time. Evanston, a magnificent center there that's a community center beyond the ice rink. Glenview, two or three rinks there, and other sites that excited us, and we brought in some of the people who helped make those rinks to when we started to create a feasibility study. In 2021, we became incorporated. We're a 501c3, so folks who want to help us and make this a reality for the community, this will be tax deductible. In 2022, the committee put together $70,000 for a feasibility study. We brought in a national consulting company. And if I might, basically their findings were there is a need. They surveyed and interviewed 25 key community members, parks people, community leaders, business people, and that need was underscored by the fact that their rinks are not nearby. There's one in Kenosha, of course, which is a hike from Racine. There's one in South Milwaukee. The one in South Milwaukee right now is at capacity, 340 kids. They don't have enough. When they have practices there, they have to divide the rink in half in order to provide opportunity. So there's definitely a need. They did some fiscal startups. There is a curve in terms of getting kids skating and a startup. However, that's a part of all good startups. We'll have to build interest, but I'm convinced that the community will embrace this.
If the feasibility study had not come back with the findings that this is economically viable, we would have folded our tent then. But we Racine County Ice Center, kept going because the feasibility study was positive. And we want to emphasize our great appreciation for the county's interest. This is driven by County Executive Jonathan Delagrave, and it's something that the county really wants to see happen.
So I wanted to ask, who's the chicken and who's the egg? Did you go to the county executive, or did the county executive express this interest first, or did it kind of all spring out of the same moment, kind of on both sides of the aisle, so to speak?
I think an amazing man that we've come to know very well, Dave Easley, had this dream and talked to County Executive Delagrave, and I think they mutually embraced this, and that's how this got off the ground and visit to Beloit. And when I was asked to be on the committee, I was struck. As a kid, I played some hockey. My best friend's Dennis Shannon, 10 kids, and his mom was president of Blackhawk Fan Club. This is the 50s when only 6 teams, the Hawks dead last, and the players would start coming over to the house, leave skates and sticks, and we started playing in the neighborhood. And this is what I like to bring to our kids right now, something to do in winter, getting kids off their butts. We would skate all day Saturday, lose track of time, and of course, the computers and video games. We need to get kids engaged. And for one thing, hockey is a tremendous team sport. Interacting, the teamwork, getting from me to we, I think, is so critical for our kids today.
Sure. But as you were saying before we went on the air, this is also about a lot more than hockey. There are all kinds of other possibilities that this can address.
We're calling it an ice arena, not necessarily an ice rink. Rink, to some people, denotes hockey only. And it's public skating, learn to skate, figure skating, short track speed skating, as well as hockey. And we're going to be seeking grants so that people who are economically and physically disadvantaged can take advantage of the facility as well. And this is something, it's not only a recreation and physical activity opportunity that does not exist in Racine anymore. We're an island in southeast Wisconsin. But it's also something that's going to drive tourism dollars to Racine. When we're able to start having tournaments, people are going to come into the county. This is also going to be an important recruiting tool for corporations. If somebody's considering a job in Racine, they're going to want to, if they're interested in ice sports, they're going to look at settling in a community that offers that. And I'm going to give an example. We've got friends Our sons grew up with this family. I played hockey with them in Kenosha. We had to go to Kenosha. And they live in Mount Pleasant. And both their sons play hockey. They pulled the boys out of Racine Unified and enrolled them in Kenosha Unified this school year because Kenosha Unified has a varsity hockey team.
Wow. Yeah, that says a lot.
I must point out, too, that Jonathan pointed out, I wasn't aware of this, that Wisconsin as a state and Racine as a county is bleeding population. We need to have entities, quality of life things that, as Mark pointed to, keep people here and enjoy what I think is a tremendous community with a great future. Mm.
So let's talk for a moment about what this ice arena would look like, its scope, its size, and the kind of amenities that would probably be part of something like this.
It likely will be in Franksville, quite possibly Franksville Park, if not maybe Haben Park. And we would ideally like 2 sheets of ice. Financially, we may only be able to realize a single sheet initially, but the arena will be designed with a footprint for 2 sheets of ice and the mechanicals for the second sheet of ice. And, excuse me, there would be a party room, if you will, above, that's part of the business plan, above the sheet of ice, so people could rent this facility and have birthday parties and so on. It also would be a place where parents could be sitting while their children are taking part in ice sports.
And according to what was on your website, the ice sheet that you're talking about would be essentially equivalent to what we see in NHL games.
Correct.
Kind of a regulation size ice rink.
That's correct.
Tell us more about Franksville. I know that there are several advantages to it being located there, advantages that might not immediately occur to people.
Well, the one advantage of Franksville is if the closer you build to major street, the less expense related to infrastructure, and there's that possibility there. We're looking at some footprints that take advantage of that financial savings.
We're county. Close to the interstate and the West End.
That's
as a county project, we want it accessible to citizens from the West End of the county as well as the East End of the county.
So this would be essentially mid-county, kind of, or roughly mid, not that's not right in the middle of Racine County, but I mean it's situated in such a place that it puts it a little bit closer at reach for folks who live west of the I.
We initially thought about Pritchard and hope for Pritchard. However, that's really filled up. It's kind of at capacity, according to the county parks experts.
We went through this 25 years ago with the county as well. And people then and now said, well, why don't you build in the old Kmart parking lot? Or, you know, they mentioned sites that are where there were shopping centers and so on. And one of the things with the county park, there's no land acquisition cost. And if you have to acquire land, and if you're on private property, the property taxes to pay and so on, and that upends the business plan.
Interesting.
And so Franksville Park has got a lot of the infrastructure, and there's no land acquisition
interesting.
Cost.
Interesting. So that's probably something that the ordinary citizen wouldn't think. I certainly wouldn't have. That you see something like an abandoned Kmart, and you just sort of assume that land is just sitting there waiting to be used, essentially free of cost. But no, somebody owns that land. You're going to have to purchase that land from them. But this site you're suggesting in Franksville, that land does not have to be purchased. It already belongs to the county.
Exactly.
Significant.
I want to give the website address.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
We'll go ahead.
Keep mentioning this.
Sure.
RacineIceCenter.com. And let's talk about the finances.
Right.
We, RCIC, Racine County Ice Center, originally said that we were going to raise $8 million. The feasibility study projected that the facility might cost $13 million. We have a memorandum of understanding with the county that we hope the county board will approve in April that there would be $5 million in bonds issued by the county. So we pledged to raise $8 million. We have upped our ante to $10 million because of inflation since the feasibility study was done, and just to cover contingency costs. And we have raised 82% of our $10 million pledge.
Mm.
Our goal is to finish by April when the county board votes. And we need our fellow citizens to step forward, to go to the website. That last 18% we have to raise is the hardest 18% to raise. And keep those nickels and dimes coming, folks.
Right. Right. I mean, and that, and you're talking about, you know, even ordinary folks. I mean, not people maybe in a position to write enormous checks, although that would be great too. But I mean, just a whole lot of very small contributions can make all the difference in the world.
And it's tax deductible.
And it's right below the logo as you open up the website. It's an outstanding website.
For those of you just joining us, we're speaking today with Mike Frontier and Mark Hertzberg about the proposal for an indoor ice arena in Racine County. It would most likely be located in Franksville Memorial Park, and it would be a huge facility. I mean, 38,000 or 28,000 something, I mean, square feet, 38,000 square feet, I think, if I can trust my numbers. And this is a proposal that has long been in the works, and over the course of several years, painstakingly researched, and they are in the closing stretch of their financial undertaking. So what kind of things have you been saying to people in terms of, let's call it your sales pitch, in terms of why Racine needs this and the kind of difference that it would make in the community?
Well, we've been stressing several things. Lee Wishaw is helping us raise funds, and Lee's an avid skater. We're talking about several quality of life, certainly a focus on youth, giving kids something to do in the winter months. And, for example, there was a snow day a few weeks ago, and it rained. You know, there was no snow, at least in the city. This would be something kids could do. So certainly a focus on youth, positive health benefits for everyone. And skating takes stamina and energy, and it's a great recreational alternative to so many folks like to walk. It's another possibility. Tremendous economic impact. Joey LaGaffe is our honorary fundraising chairman. Joey, as you know, may know, owns several restaurants. And he's all in because he sees a spillover for the community out there and throughout this county. And again, finally, it promotes Racine County, which this would be another clear asset for us. And in terms of endorsements, RAMAC has supported this. The county's working with us on a significant grant from the state. And we've gotten endorsements from RAMAC, from Visiting Racine. And I must go back to Visioning the Greater Racine when we did these listening sessions around the community. Recreation opportunities was raised as an issue in virtually many of these 30 or 40 sessions that were held. So I think we're following through on and listening to our community in creating this opportunity for our families.
Mark, you mentioned an effort some years ago, I assume essentially along the same lines.
Yes.
To try to get an ice arena built in Racine County. Tell us more about that effort and any lessons that were learned from that attempt.
This is actually the third go-round. Lee Wishaw has been involved. There was one in the 70s before we moved to Racine, so I don't know much about that. But just before the turn of the century, then County Executive Gene Jacobson came to us, another nonprofit, about having a year-round indoor ice facility, which would have been in Pritchard Park. And it actually was approved by the county board, and bonds were going to be sold on a Monday. And Friday, before the bonds were going to be sold, then Governor Scott McCallum ended shared revenue. And with the fiscal uncertainty, County Executive Jacobson took the bond issues off the table.
Wow. Mm. Oh, and, so yeah, near and yet so far.
So close, yes.
Wow, wow. So otherwise, that was, it sounds like that was a commendable effort and just kind of undone by something in Madison that was unanticipated.
Correct.
So when we're talking about the timeline, what needs to happen in terms of your fundraising versus what would happen after that? Just sketch for us kind of the arc of what you hope is going to be happening now.
Well, with the new county board being seated in April, I believe the bonding will go forward probably in June, and by the fall we're starting to issue RFPs, and we hope to start actually building next winter of 25.
Wow!
And the facility would be done in 26. These are the projections from Ms. Zimmer, the county financial wizard. So that's our timeline. So it's a year from now, theoretically, if we make all our benchmarks, we begin building this outstanding facility.
Wow. The facility will be managed by the county. Our role, RCIC, is to raise the money and to get the thing going. And then it is the county that will issue the RFPs, request for proposals, to designers and architects. And they will be the construction manager. They will approve the architect. And they will then hire a third party to manage the facility.
So, you know, you had have with you what looks like kind of a proposal, but it is very much just a proposal in terms of exactly what this would look like. So that's the specifics still are to be determined.
There was an architecture firm that is tied in with HVS who did the feasibility study, who gave us an idea of what it might look like. And they gave us cost estimates for a single-sheet facility, two-sheet facility, one-story, two-story, and so on. But that was only to get the dialogue going.
Right.
And if that company wants to participate in the project, they will have to submit a proposal when the RFPs go out. It's going to be an open competition, if you will.
Right, which is a wise way to do things. There are probably people listening who don't really understand this whole notion of bonding. The $5 million in bonds in terms of the county. I wonder if you could just briefly explain kind of what that means or how that works or, you know, that kind of impact for ordinary citizens.
Well, as Mark pointed out, our estimates are $13 million. We realize with inflation we might be, it might be more than that. And with this memorandum of understanding, we hope to reach 10 to reduce the county's burden to some degree, and the bonding would go out and borrow that money, I believe, on a over a two-year period, and that would help bridge the financial gap between what we've raised and the actual cost. And the county has that bonding privilege. And as I understand it, they're financially they're well within their bonding parameters.
So that
shouldn't be a tremendous burden for the county financially.
So it's a fancy term for borrowing money.
There you go. Exactly.
What's interesting is that a private nonprofit entity, RCIC, is footing 2/3 of the bill.
Right.
For an entity that the county is going to own and the county is going to run. And so this has been a wonderful partnership.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I think Jonathan mentions the word leverage. I mean, this is what the county wants to do, is leverage money that minimizes the burden on our community and brings good things to us through the effort of, and it's been an amazing effort. Who would have thought 4 years of countless meetings. We probably met 50 times over those 4 years. Unbelievable.
I'm guessing, yeah.
But, yeah.
I know that part of what has made this happen is a fairly substantial anonymous gift that kind of was a great catalyst for your fundraising efforts. I'm just curious. I mean, obviously, we're not going to know who that is, but I assume you know who that is, and I'm just curious if you know anything about what prompted this person to kind of give this sizable gift that, that got everything going? Were they championing this for any particular reason?
In all honesty, we don't know who it is.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And we're just thankful for the generosity and community-mindedness of this these people, of this family.
Wow, very good. So you are nearing a deadline, and within the next few months, you are really hoping to be able to raise, well, it would, it's over a million, almost 2 million that remains to be raised.
Yes.
Of your...
About 1.8, yeah.
Right. So explain once again what ordinary people can do if they would like to kind of step up to the plate and be part of this effort.
Our website, again, is RacineIceCenter.com, and you can read about the project there, and you can donate there, I say unashamedly.
Yeah, there's a nice big blue button, and you know, with a click.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very good. So I wish we were on television rather than radio. I don't say that often, but because you've brought some interesting artifacts from your respective careers. So, Mike, tell us what's sitting on the table right in front of you.
Well, we got a puck here, which typifies the hockey side of things, a skate tightener, which goes along with all of skating, figure skating, speed skating, a Blackhawk jersey, Bobby Hull, and those exciting days when the Blackhawks were the best in the league. And my buddy here, Gump Hertzberg, is wearing his Ranger jersey with Hertzberg on the back. Beautiful blue, red, white, and blue Ranger jersey.
I played hockey in high school and college, third string JV. Never rose above that. Then I played at the Kenosha Ice Arena with our sons when they were men's league. I coached one of our sons, Aaron, when he was playing. And I was the backup goalie for the men's league team. And I got my first win at age 50.
Whoa.
When I was put in the goal for the other team, whose goalie had not showed up.
Tell us,
And I've got the mask that, too bad we're not on TV. The thing looks like the mask that Jason wore in the Halloween movies.
So that's a goalie mask then.
Yeah, so I've had a lifelong love with skating. I started playing roller hockey in Central Park. And I was fortunate to go to a high school in New Jersey that had an ice rink. And I started playing there. And we want to bring this opportunity, not just hockey, but all phases of ice sports to our community.
Right. And one of you, I don't remember who it was, said something to the effect that Racine is an island when it comes to that. That
indeed.
Is, there are all these other counties here in southeastern Wisconsin that have ice arenas of their own, and Racine County does not. And
exactly.
That strikes you as strange.
Right. It's unfortunate, and we want to correct that, bring an arena to bear for our
right.
fellow citizens.
And I must point out, back when my kids were young, I would make rinks in the backyard, and you would need, you know, a week or two of 10-degree weather, which non-existent anymore.
This is...
You cannot have consistent ice, and it's a tragedy because it is a beautiful sport.
People talk about there was a small rink called a studio sheet of ice at Festival Park when Festival Hall opened in 1988.
There sure was.
But it was small. You couldn't play hockey. You couldn't do other things. And it was not year-round.
Mm.
And the refrigeration system failed. And then Mayor Jim Smith, there was a $300,000 estimate to fix the refrigeration system, and he wanted to put that money into the year-round county facility rather than fix the small studio sheet.
Right.
And we've talked to people who were affiliated with that, and one of them serves on the county board, that the thing was in use, constant use, and was a very popular amenity.
This is where you could go to learn skate very easily, and beautiful setting there by the lakefront.
Yeah.
It's something we should resurrect.
Absolutely. Well, this, in the meantime, is a wonderful opportunity for people to join in the effort and try to bring this to fruition. And one more time, remind us about this crucial meeting that is coming up I think you said, in April.
Well, the county executive Delagrave will bring the bonding probably to the county board in May or June after they're seated and have more information on this. And if that is passed, then we will move forward and begin all the effort that goes into construction.
We've had one vote already by the county board, the existing county board, and they voted unanimously June 26th to they approved the memorandum of understanding with the county and approved our going forward with a public fundraising campaign.
Very good. Yeah, can't get a much more emphatic green light than that.
That's right.
Great. Last time, the website address for people who want to get more information and perhaps donate to the cause.
RacineIceCenter.com. And there's a link at the bottom also to news articles that have been written about it. Racine County Eye is doing another article today or tomorrow, we think. The Journal Times has covered it well, including the Kiwanis Club of West Racine recently gave us a generous $10,000 gift for the project.
Wow, very good. Well, we hope the gifts keep coming, and in the meantime, we commend you for all of the hard work that you have done on behalf of this important cause for the community. Mike Frontier and Mark Hertzberg, it was great to have you joining us on the morning show today, and best wishes for the home stretch of this big effort.
Thank you. We'll see you on the ice in a couple years.
Very good. Part two of today's morning show coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. It's 8:42. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. And here's part two of today's program. And in this portion of WGTD's Morning Show, I'm excited to reconnect with Rich Smith, who is the Managing Artistic Director of the Over Our Head Players, who are headquartered in the 6th Street Theater in downtown Racine. And this is a company that's been around for quite a long time, offering some marvelous theatrical experiences to southeastern Wisconsin. And they are about to celebrate a really exciting and fun anniversary. And I wanted to be sure to talk with Rich Smith about it. It is the 20th anniversary of their Snowdance Comedy Festival, a celebration and showcase for 10-minute comedies. And when I heard Rich Smith make mention of this at a recent performance, I couldn't believe my ears. I never would have dreamt that Snowdance had been around that long. And so anyway, we're going to spend the next few minutes talking about this and touching on a couple of other facets of the exciting work, of the exciting things going on at the 6th Street Theater. Rich Smith, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm glad we can have this conversation, and let me take a moment to congratulate you and others on the wonderful job that you did with your most recent production called Seven Sacrifices. I am so glad that I was there to see one of those performances. For anybody who missed it or does not know what I'm talking about, explain this work, which I understand you really helped to create.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, no, it was very special for us. So the mission of the Over Our Head Players is to do new and unique theater experiences, step outside the box and do some different things. And one of the passions of the Over Our Head Players is to celebrate our hometown. You know, whether it be through musicals about Kringle, which we do, or making Racine the home of the 10-Minute Comedy Festival, which we also do, it just made this project sort of a great fit. We partnered with the Racine Vet Center on Main Street, which is also, formerly the VFW. We researched for almost 2 years finding original letters remembrances, news articles from real Racinians over the last 165 years of military service, and created a show that is monologues of these real words tied together with live music of the period that the words were written in. And it's been very educational for us and moving for us, and I'm glad you appreciated it. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a deeply moving performance, and I appreciated the work itself and also how well it was executed on your stage. And one of the things, of course, that is distinctive about the 6th Street Theater is its size. I mean, it is a very, very small space in which to do theater, and of course, it makes certain things, maybe all but impossible or largely impractical, but it makes all kinds of other things absolutely possible. And it's incredible how exciting and intimate and powerful theater can be when it occurs in those close quarters.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. You know, it was over, you know, 30 years ago, some friends and I were really motivated by storefront theaters like this that we went to in New York City and Chicago. And we really wanted to try to do something like that in Racine, and we're so lucky to be able to have done that. And now here we are 33 years later still doing it. But there is a special rapport that you have with an audience when there's only, you know, 90 of them compared to a few hundred. And they're you can reach out and touch them. And, you know, an actor can get away with eye movement and breathing and different things that wouldn't carry on a larger stage. And it does make for a very unique experience, for sure.
So speaking of unique experiences, I'm so excited to talk with you about this thing called Snow Dance. So first of all, I don't remember just how long you have been at the helm of the Over Our Head Players, but were you at the helm? I know you were already very much a part of things when Snow Dance was created 20 years ago. Tell us what you can about the genesis of what's turned out to be a theatrical juggernaut.
Yeah, thank you. It's so much fun. Hard to switch gears from military drama to short comedy, but I can do it. I was at the helm. This is sort of my brainchild. I have been in my position for all 33 of our years, luckily enough. So this was an idea that that I had 20 years ago. I know, you know, playwrights want their plays to be done, and at that time, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, there was this movement with playwrights who were writing short things. These 10-minute comedies were coming out, and you heard about different, you know, festivals of 10-minute comedies that were being done around the country. And I thought, well, let's try one here, and if we get, you know, I don't know, 7 or 8 that we can do, and maybe 30 people apply, we'll see what happens. In that first year, we got over 100 submissions. We had 10 finalists. The audience loved it. We had to add shows, and immediately we knew we were onto something. And so here we are 20 years later, and Snow Dance is now the longest-running 10-minute comedy competition in the world. We've got a copyright on it, and playwrights know us. The Dramatists Guild knows us. We've had world premieres on our stage, so Snow Dance and our names are in script publications around the world, and we love it. We love it, and the audience loves it as well.
Right. And, of course, it has been such a success that it regularly sells out, and even as this interview airs, there are very few, if any, seats left, although people should investigate. But, I mean, I know for a fact over the years that more often than not, I am not able to get a ticket for Snow Dance because it is so incredibly popular. And, of course, part of what makes it such an intriguing night of theater is that you have these 10-minute comedies that range all across the board. I mean, the array of possibilities, of course, are endless. Try to give our listeners some sense of what I'm talking about in terms of the immense variety of comedies and humor that one experiences, even if you just go once to Snow Dance.
Yeah, exactly. So it's nonstop action if you come to Snow Dance. There's never a scene change pause or anything like that. We go from one 10-minute comedy right into the next. We tie them together with short little sketches in between to help introduce the next playwright that's coming up. And when the audience member comes in, they have a ballot in their program, and they know they can watch all 10 of these back to back and then vote on the one that they thought was the funniest. And that's how we award cash prizes to those playwrights. But it all starts in late summer when entries become available, and we take submissions from playwrights all over the world. This year we had about 600 submissions, and that was during a writer's strike. Our largest submission total was close to 900 a few years ago. So we had about 600 submissions, and we read them all. Most of them we read twice, and we always try to find, of course, the funniest, but, of course, a variety. You know, you want different styles of comedy. There's dark humor. There's situational humor. There's couple humor, romantic comedy. So we always try to find a great variety of it. And it's amazing. You know, we will get a play from Australia, or this year we got one from Iraq, and it was very similar to one that a guy wrote in California. Playwrights in the world population all are experiencing the same situations and finding the same things funny, and that's super educational for us, and I think great for the audience to see as well.
I'm curious, when you say we read them all, who is exactly we?
I have a mouse in my pocket. it's me. No, I like to read as many as I can. After we started getting over 400 or 500 a year, I kind of gave up on the fact that I just can't read them all anymore. But we have a committee each year that rotates between a few of us that have done this now many years and get it. And this year there were 9 of us on that committee. So everything got read 2 times. Most things got read 3 times. And then it's sitting down and having conversations with the readers and, you know, going to war, as it were, over ones we liked and ones we didn't like. And then it's always very difficult. And you have to make sure you can cast them, you know. So we kind of integrate our audition process with the selection process. And it gets a little complicated that way.
Well, right.
There's always years where there's that one finalist that we just all were in love with, but we can't cast it. I don't have that actor who could be, you know, the 80-year-old grandmother and be a comedian at the same time. And then lo and behold, next year we get an 80-year-old comedian who auditions. And it's just weird. I never know. But I always try to make a good balance of different styles of humor, for sure.
When you sort of issue the call for more 10-minute comedies, and these writers respond from all over the country and from other countries as well, how much do you tell them about the Sixth Street Theater, that is, the company itself, and maybe even more importantly, the space in which these are going to be presented? I mean, I guess another way to ask this are the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who write these 10-minute comedies and send them in to you, do they understand the venue in which their comedy would be presented if it were selected?
Oh, I think the vast majority of them do, just by being familiar with other festivals like this around the world. I mean, I think the majority of theaters that will step out into this type of thing are sort of I guess grittier, smaller, more engaging kinds of spaces that take chances on things like this and go out there and do it. I think playwrights are familiar with the changes in venues. You know, gone are the large, you know, proscenium stages, and, you know, in the 80s and 90s and even the 70s, the thrust stage theaters were popular. And today it's theaters are new theaters are in warehouses and storefronts and things like that. So I think a lot of the playwrights get it. They may not fully understand, oh, that's only a 100-seat house. But I've also had a lot of playwrights that have come and said, wow, this place is big. because I've been to places in Chicago that only seat 50 or something like that. So, we don't spell it out for them in the rules. But I think most playwrights who enter these 10-minute competitions understand, the type of venue that's going to produce this type of humor, and I think they get it.
I don't think we've delved into this specific matter quite yet. How much, in terms of what comes in, is sort of adult material with a capital A, if you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. And when you are selecting what ultimately will be performed on the stage, what kind of consideration, if any, do you give to language or nudity or, you know, whatever else can potentially be part of really good theater. What sort of are the constraints, if there are any of that nature?
Yeah, so, you know, we like to say that we don't edit for language or subject matter at all. Like, if somebody sends us something that's out there, we're going to read it. We're going to consider it. Of course there are lines. You know, the lines between professional theater, regional theater, community theater have always been drawn. And but we, the Overhead Players as a community theater, have always felt that we respect the maturity of our audience, and we don't want to make a decision for them on material that we don't think they're mature enough to digest. I don't know how else to put it. We'll take chances and do things, and we do all we can to let people know, yeah, if this were a movie, it would be PG-13, you know, and or if this were a movie, it would be R. And then we'll let our audience make their mind up. I've never felt comfortable as an artistic director feeling that I had to decide what someone who goes to theater should or shouldn't see. I don't think that's my job. I think that's the audience's job.
Right.
So we try to put that out there. Now, we won't. Nudity, I mean, come on, no. And I've been to theaters who do that, and they're professional and let it go. But there are some lines, you know, that we, of course, won't cross. But if we read something, especially in Snowdance, and we think it's funny, and we think it will resonate with an audience, and we think they'll think it's funny, and it's not over the line, tasteless, yeah, we'll consider it. And we have. And this Snowdance, for example, carries about a PG-13, so it's not as bad as others. We've had other snow dances that were R, and we've had a few that have been G as well. We never know until we read the plays. So makes it sort of a roll of the dice.
Right. So generally speaking, there will be, in a sense, an overall rating for a given evening.
Correct.
Okay. And what else do you want to tell us about this year's crop of winning 10-minute comedies in this year's Snowdance Festival?
Oh, man. Oh, it's educational every year, Greg. We read this. Last year we had this guy from who wrote a play from Italy. He lived in Florence, Italy. And I read this play, and I said, this guy's in Florence, Italy? It sounds like somebody's... And he was Italian. He didn't, you know, he could write in English and barely speak it. And it was funny, and it fit, but it carried a vibe of something that someone in Chicago could have written. So this year, you know, we got a place from all over again. And our biggest buckets are always from New York. The second biggest bucket is from California. The third is usually from Florida. And the fourth is like maybe Chicago. And then it's all over. Wisconsin is like way down the list. And this year it was funny. Most of the scripts that ended up being chosen were either on the East Coast or the West Coast. So there's a very New York versus California vibe to this year's festival. We do have one from Chicago, and we have one from New Mexico as well. But I think everything else is either from a city in California or a city on the East Coast. So there's that kind of vibe to it this year. No local submissions this year. No Racinians made the cut. We've had that in the past. And when our Racine playwrights get in, it's always because they deserved it.
Right.
When we read the plays, we take off cover pages, so we don't know who wrote it or where they're from, and I think that's the best way to do it. So if a play's funny, it gets in. It doesn't have anything to do with who they are, you know.
Sounds good to me. So as I mentioned, by the time this interview airs, there will, I hope, still be a few precious few tickets still available for the Snowdance performances. Give us a sense of when performances are, and if there are any tickets left, what nights they might be available.
You got it. Thanks, Greg. I really appreciate that. And there are still some tickets available. So we open on Friday night, February 9th, and then we run every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Thursday until March 10th. Right now, I checked with the box office this morning. We have tickets available on a few of our Thursday shows. I know March 7th has tickets available. March 8th may have tickets available, and a couple of the other Thursdays. And once we start doing seating charts, sometimes we can release two or three tickets here and there when we know what our seating requirements are. So keep an eye on the website. Some things might come up on other nights as well in the next week here. Or if you want to get on a waiting list, you can call our box office or email us. and let us know that you want to get on a waiting list as well, because between now and February, things change, and that usually works out. But visit our website at overourheadplayers.org or email us at boxoffice@overourheadplayers.org.
Rich Smith, managing and artistic director